This is Damien O'Doherty. Welcome to Center Maryland's The Lobby Podcast. So grateful to have one of Maryland's leading voices. His name is Howard Libet. He is the CEO of the Baltimore Jewish Council, which is the leading voice for the community throughout the region, to the state, to the nation, really to the world. We'll get into it with Howard because there's so many close ties between the state of Maryland, Nation of Israel. And Howard, you are at the center of that. I just want to wish you, Center Maryland's condolences and prayers for all the challenges the community is facing. And every time I go to my phone, I learn of more challenges. And I just wanted to check in with you and to check your pulse, see what, how things are going with you.
Thanks, Damien. It has been just a remarkable, a traumatic time for so many in our community. The first few days, the news was just overwhelming. And then it continues to be. We continue to hear horrifying stories of what the Hamas terrorists did when they were basically slaughtering innocents in kibbutzes and other communities along the border with Gaza. We're all saddened by the continuing loss of innocent lives in both, Palestinian lives in Gaza, Israeli lives, what are sure to be the loss of more lives come ahead. But it all lands at the feet of the Hamas terrorists, whose mission is to wipe out Israel, is their number one on their agenda. And, we talk, you've heard talk probably that this was the single greatest loss of Jewish life on a day since the Holocaust, which is,
I had to sort of fact check that in my head. It's mortifying.
On a personal level, like my kids who have gone to Jewish overnight camp for all these years, and they always have Israeli counselors there who've just completed their military training. While these counselors who were back in Israel are all getting called up now. So all these young people who my kids bonded with over a summer now are heading to the front lines. And their camp always brings over some campers from Israel. They're seeing social media pictures from those kids hanging out in bomb shelters, loading more supplies into the bomb shelters during breaks in rocket attacks. That's not stuff that middle school, high school kids ought to be having to experience anywhere in the world. And for my kids to see friends going through it, it's traumatizing.
Right. Young people going to war. That's where we are. Howard, I just sort of speaking, preaching to the converted, as we might say on my side of the faith fence or in the community of faith. And it's important we take down all those fences that exist in Maryland. I feel like Marylanders were central to the evolution of Israel's dynamism in the world economy and with democracy. I feel like I know Marylanders who were setting up companies over there and taking trade missions there. And, you know so many of us, Howard, in the Catholic and Christian and all the faiths that get invited to participate in the trip to Israel every year. The BJC was the big sponsor. Now Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Foundation sponsors that long-running event. And there's so many of us that feel connected through our Maryland experience, but I think we get online and we don't know what to do. Are we supposed to? I'm a propagandist by nature, and I don't like what I'm seeing. I want to get out there and help. What can I do to fight that stuff? And
I'm not going to encourage you to go sign up and be a lone soldier for the Israel Defense Force.
I don't think that would work for Israel.
But no, I will tell you in the weeks since the attack, the support from so many of Maryland's faith communities has been so uplifting. The archdiocese has reached out. Our Archbishop Lori recorded a video that we shared across the community. The Episcopal Diocese, Bishop Sutton and others, and they've been out there, attending, joining our vigils, and so many other faith leaders, so many other leaders across our community, non-Jewish leaders. Like, they get it. They understand the pain and the trauma it's causing. It's caused the Jewish community, and they've stood up, from Governor Moore to all 10 members of our congressional delegation. And you're right. Our ties, Maryland's ties to Israel, are deep. Over 30 years ago, inflation and unemployment were kind of a huge problem in Israel, and it was job issues and everything. In Maryland, the Associated, the Jewish Federation of Baltimore, in conjunction with the Maryland Department of Commerce and others, helped create the Maryland Israel Development Center that was intended to create jobs and economic development here and there, to build ties. And over those years, it brought over 40 companies from Israel, have their U.S. headquarters here in Maryland, high-end cyber tech, the Iron Dome folks who have created that, a lot of medical technology companies. So there's like lots of high-end jobs that we've created there that they've created here that really deepen the relationship. So that's why there's so much business and commerce, and why every governor has made a trade mission to Israel with a large contingent, and we have so many relationships there. It's the only democracy in the Middle East, and we want to build those relationships. And there's such innovation happening there. It will only help the state of Maryland to create jobs, and the number of high-end tech manufacturing jobs and other jobs. There's fintech companies that are located in Hunt Valley. I mean, it's just such a positive.
Expansive, you know, it's really expansive, and it's a deep network. And, you know, whether it's Bean Seibel or Barry Bogage, right? All these names,
all these
that
guys
we
who helped
grew
found
up,
it. Yeah, right? Absolutely. Barry retired 2 years ago, but is still involved. And it's just, we've created such an unbreakable relationship between our states and our universities. You know, the number of universities here in the state that have relationships, research programs, you know, makes it meaningful for the future too.
Is there anything we could do in a legislative context or a governance context in the next year that would sort of double down or refocus on that commitment? Because it's amazing economic development for state, and what better time to stand with Israel and offer more than just prayers, you know,
I've got to praise bipartisan support across the legislature and both Maryland Democratic and Republican governors, where they are investing a good share in the Maryland Israel Development Center. In addition to the Jewish community putting dollars in, they are investing from a security standpoint. In the last couple of years, the state has created grant funding for synagogues and schools and daycare centers that are at risk of hate crimes. So not just Jewish ones.
We're getting ready.
Really meaningful. We're going to try and see if we can get some additional dollars in the coming session, because I mean, the cost of security keeps going up for all of our institutions. We're talking about, you know, the president announced his plan to combat anti-Semitism this summer. We were just having a call earlier this week with the governor's administration to talk about, are there ways for Maryland to further that, to implement it, to help combat domestic terrorism and extremism, to take additional steps. And then the bully pulpit is just so important. You know, we all see the high-end attention that a few celebrities who are express anti-Semitic thoughts, whether it's
right,
Kanye or others, they get all that attention. The way to combat is through our leaders who our kids and people look up to, government leaders, entertainment leaders, sports leaders, to stand up and oppose hate and oppose anti-Semitism. And we've seen so much of that in our state, which is really gratifying.
Yeah. And your colleague, my old colleague, Meredith Weisel in Washington, just today, or just this week, we saw more bizarre speech being flashed up against, I guess, George Washington University. And so you have colleagues all over the country that are dealing with this. How do you all share and support one another through these?
You know, sometimes it's the one-on-one conversations. Sometimes it's the group conversations. Sometimes it's just going home and closing the door and sitting in darkness for a little while and turning off CNN and saying, I'm not going to pay attention to the news. I mean, I can't watch anymore, but I can't look away. is the way I was on a trip in the last soon after the attacks, and on the way there I sat and watched CNN on the whole flight, and I realized that was not good for my mental health. And so on the flight home, I sat and just watched dumb sitcoms because I just needed that 2 hours to like really be unplugged from everything.
If anybody can envision Howard Libet watching sitcoms, is, you know, I've worked with you for 20 years and I would have loved to peel you away for a sitcom.
Friends can, friends on a Southwest flight can really empty your brain for a little while.
Talk to me about some of the special activity that's been going on with you all in Baltimore. You just had Governor Moore celebrate. Y'all talk to the audience about.
Oh, the like, yes. Love so it. This month in October, where we've been celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Elijah Cummings Youth Program in Israel. The legendary Congressman Cummings, together with Black and Jewish leaders, 25 years ago, formed this program that identifies a dozen, 13 high school students who live or attend school in the congressional district, to participate now in a 2-year fellowship, leadership, service, learning about government. And that includes spending the summer between their junior and senior year in Israel, exploring Israel, living on a youth village that meeting a lot of, that works with a lot of Jews of color, particularly Ethiopian Jews. So most of the students in the program are students of color. They're not Jewish generally. They are learning about deepening the relationships between African-American and Jewish communities here in Baltimore. That was a real big focus of Elijah Cummings' life. And he was really dedicated to this program to the extent that, you know, when he was alive, he participated in every student interview. The students who interviewed, and if you could remember the big booming voice of Congressman Cummings, they would walk in this room and there'd be like 15 to 18 board members sitting around a table. Congressman Cummings was always at the head of the table. And you're this kid at the end of your sophomore year of high school walking into this room, and the congressman always asks the first question. And if you can survive that interview process, that does a lot. And it was meaningful. And he's kept up with these students. He would, you know, when some of these felt, what I one of the stories that really touches me was one of the fellows toward the end of his senior year had gotten into a bunch of amazing colleges. And one was trying to do visits of one of the colleges. The money they were offering to pay for travel wasn't enough for him to be able to afford it. And Congressman Cummings anonymously funded the student's trip to fly out to California to visit Stanford. And we didn't tell the student that until he was at the congressman's funeral a couple of years later. And it was so meaningful to him to hear that. And we're so lucky. So this program, we have over we've touched over 300 students over the years. There are people, you know, Victor Blackwell on CNN was in the first class of the program. And I still remember the day that President Trump tweeted a bunch of insults on a Saturday morning at Elijah Cummings, and seeing Victor break down on the air responding to it was just such a powerful moment of what it meant for Elijah Cummings. So they were fortunate. 25th anniversary event, Governor Moore speaking at it as part of it. The program's continuing.
It's a big get. It's hard. He's a hard get.
You know, Congressman Cummings' daughter, Jennifer, wanting to carry on his vision, has joined the board and has become active in it. And we're fortunate that Congressman Mfume has served as the honorary board chair, continues to, and taking the place of Congressman Cummings, because it's so important to tie to Congress, the students getting to go visit Congress, visit Congressional Black Caucus. This program it's just created such a network of graduates who understand the importance of Israel, understand the importance of Black Jewish relations, and want to build a better world. And look, given the going on in Israel and the attack, the question was asked of us, is it appropriate to hold the 25th anniversary event? And we said, absolutely, because at a time like this, when we're seeing such hate, it's more important than ever that we create future leaders in the spirit of Elijah Cummings who want to build deeper relationships. So it's more important than ever that people support programs like this and build that next generation of ambassadors.
Before we get into your origin story, Howard, which is why we're all here, talk to us about your Orioles baseball season. It seems like you're one of the biggest baseball fans I know.
My
I know your kids are real authentic baseball fans.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a Sunday season ticket plan for the Orioles since before I was married, which would be
And you've
more than 20
retained
years
it.
ago. And we were there were two seats, and it became three seats when our son became old enough to need a seat, and it became four seats. And yes, we attend a lot of Sunday baseball and a lot of games and a lot of losses over the years. And the last time the Orioles made the playoffs for this year, we brought the kids. They were so little they didn't really remember. So at least they got to go to a playoff game this year, and even though they lost, it's a memory. And excited to continue it, I hope.
It's nothing like being there. But I tell you, and I tell people, I would tell the GBC this because that they just had a big win with this tech hub designation.
Right.
Mark Anthony Thomas is the CEO. Am I doing this right?
Howard? Yes.
He picked that thing out there and said, "We're going to go for this." I was like, "Ooh, this guy's brave, man." And he said, "We're going to go for this." They went out and got it. I said, "That's off to the GBC." What is a little new life and reinvigoration in some of these organizations mean for a leader in them? We all love Don Fry, amazing career. And when you get these transitions in organizations and leadership, it's a big moment. You're one of the premier ones in the state. What's it like for you to see a new GBC head come in and have him, make up some ground early here?
Yeah, it's exciting. Look, it's exciting to see. We all love my predecessor who was in his position for 25 years. But also, like, people coming with new ideas can be a good thing. So I think energy. There's energy with it. There's energy for the thinking of how can the GBC not just touch downtown, but touch other areas of the city.
They're on it, right? They connect regionally. Yeah. And then they want to, I don't
Look,
remember
we're so,
the slogan,
we're so excited
but they want to
about,
connect to downtown, right?
Absolutely. Like looking at Northwest Baltimore, where a lot of the Jewish population is, we're so excited about what we hope is coming for the Pimlico Racecourse and the area around it. And what that's going to mean for development up there. We're seeing new housing. We're seeing, hopefully Park Heights Avenue will pick up. And, looking forward to what happens, if in fact that track becomes a year-round track for the state and the commercial parcels that they're going to be developed around that property, what an exciting time for Northwest Baltimore.
We've got, and you're going to say that, we've got to say thank you to a wonderful career from Martha Nathanson. And now we've got Jennifer Witten over there at Life Bridge, an alumnus from the Maryland Hospital Association. So it sounds like all cylinders are firing in the community.
I certainly hope so. We met with her recently. Looking forward to work with her and partnering, continuing to part with Sinai and Lethbridge.
So how did a Chicago kid, super bright, undeniably affable, I should ask, how did an undeniably affable guy become a reporter? But I want to know how you got to Baltimore. And I want to know, give us a little bit, start in Chicago.
So I grew up in the North Shore of Chicago in Highland Park, and in
That's like a pretty famous place. Is that where President Obama lived, or who
no,
lived there?
No, it's Michael Jordan lived there for a while. I can remember being in my nursing home, overlooked the parking lot for a while where the Chicago Bulls used to practice. So we could look out. I could sit with him in his room and look out and see Bulls players when they finished practice getting in their fans. But it's a place where Ferris Bueller's Day Off, a lot of those
right.
John Hughes, if you remember Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the garage with the wall,
of course,
over the ravine. I remember where that house was. It was real.
Cameron's dad's house. That's right.
Yes, exactly. That community inspired a lot of those movies. And then when I was fortunate enough to go out to Stanford University after high school, spent 4 years there, went thinking I was going to be a chemistry major and become a physician like my parents. After suffering through organic chemistry and realizing I was spending nights at the school newspaper and studying instead of studying chemistry, I realized I think my life lies outside of science. and ended up working at the paper and studying political science and doing a bunch of internships.
Extreme curiosity. You know, you seem to me to be a person that has a lot of curiosity. Would you say you sort of had an extreme curiosity to be a doctor, and then you just found that you were becoming curious about newsmaking?
More, and so I, like, in retrospect, I've kind of found, I think I went to school thinking science and went to college thinking science and medicine because my high school teachers in those subjects were the better teachers. They just interested me more. The teachers in the other subjects, I hate to say it, they weren't the more talented teachers I had. Right. And I think it's amazing, like you, sometimes I think you gravitate toward the subjects where the teachers inspire you as much as the subject matter itself.
So you come out of Stanford, what, and right before the tech boom, right during?
I graduated in spring of 94. So I don't remember where we were in the boom.
They were cooking then.
I was land a 2-year internship at the Baltimore Sun. I had never been to Baltimore other than flying in for one night to interview for the position.
Do you remember thinking like what your thoughts were on sort of the prestige level of a Baltimore Sun internship? Because
it was a great opportunity. It was fortunate when started, it was a union position. So I got benefits. Lots of those kinds of positions did not have benefits. There was not
the
great.
Shout out to Set Parks. Is that what we can do there? Is that
Parks,
all
right? Right. That's so it was. So when I started, it was, it was a great opportunity at the time. Of course, the Sun had 8 or 10 foreign bureaus, a thriving Washington bureau. Of course, the state of journalism has changed since then. But it was I moved to Baltimore, and pretty much all I knew about Baltimore was having watched a lot of TV show Homicide: Life on the Street.
Sure.
That was in its heyday at the time. So I'm watching it, and that's like, okay, this is going to be interesting.
Marketing by David Simon.
Yes. Yeah. That now, of course, people think of Baltimore, the people who've never been here see Baltimore as being defined as The Wire,
right,
which we
right.
know is a small slice.
Right. Very small.
A small fictionalized slice. What great, I started, my first couple of years working in Howard County in the Bureau back in the days, there was an office, there were like 12 reporters, a couple of editors. We published
12 reporters in the Howard County Bureau.
In Howard County alone, yes.
Larry Carson.
Legendary. Well, no, that was
pre-Larry Carson.
Pre-Carson. At the time, Larry was still covering Baltimore County. It was a hardy crew. We worked, we were putting out a separate Howard County section every single day of news. And it was an amazing experience for a young journalist.
We were really like at the founding of the Banner. I just, Ted had just passed after founding it. And what are you going to cover was the question. What's going to be the area of coverage? And I just doing my worst Ted Venatola's imitation, just trying to get everybody to take a look at Howard County right out of the gate. They're doing great coverage there now. But in the beginning, they had to get their sea legs in a certain place. And, Howard County, they couldn't pull it off. But now they're out there. There's a lot going on out there. I say it's the most plugged in, audience, people with IP addresses, that you could find in the country. Probably the most connected, educated audience you could find outside of Northern California or something like that.
It was when I was there and we were publishing a separate section, people cared. People called you with ideas. People wanted their stuff covered and we were able to. And when I was over my years at the Sun, toward the end, I was editing, we were having to figure out budget cuts. It was just so painful to be trimming back from that suburban coverage because we know the people there wanted coverage. There's no one else.
Right. They can afford it.
They can afford it. It's a lucrative advertising market if you can make it work. And there's no one else. If no one's watching, how are people going to find out what's happening? Right. And be vigilant.
If we don't take Howard County and focus on it as a Baltimore region, whether you're the BJC or the Washington area, is going to pick it up and find it because there's just too much happening there.
I know. I mean, and as thriving as the Washington Post is, like they've cut back their suburban coverage too. It's just right. not it's just it's you know, I'll our county, but you'll appreciate this story. But after when the Sun when all papers done this,
you
I don't
got
want 10
more
blame
minutes.
The
Can
Sun.
I steal you for
it's not
10
just
more?
blaming the Sun, but like when we cut back on the number of reporters we had in Annapolis, I remember legendary old George Della pulling me aside one day when he saw me in Annapolis and saying, you know, now that you guys don't have a reporter sitting across all the committees because you don't have enough staff, you should see what we're getting away with and no one notices.
Yeah, I believe that. I also remember Tim chastising me. I was reading The Sun and he said, George Della, Senator Della said, is that the only paper you read? He's like, you might find more information useful to you in the Afro. Have you ever read the Afro? So he started getting me to read the Afro, you know, George Della from South Baltimore. So
yes, the predecessor of our current Senate president.
That's right. His dad was Senate president. So he was sort of stuck in the middle of two Senate presidents there, I think. Hey, you know, I don't, you know, we just glossed over 15 years in Baltimore Sun there, interned to, but I think people may or may not understand that. Well, your role there, the best way I can explain it is when there were like four or five sections of the paper, that front section that had everything from the world news to the local news to the to the editorial section in the back and all that, you know, that was, you were supremely responsible at the end of the day for that.
For the news, not the opinion. Don't blame me for the opinions, but for the news. Yes, I was. At one point, I was overseeing the local, the national, the foreign, the business, and you know, had an amazing team of people who were really dedicated. Even as numbers, you know, it was how do we? There's so much we have to cover, and how do we keep up? And people did an amazing job. I mean, there are plenty of days where I miss working with them. Team and the responsibility we felt like we had.
I don't think people go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, I didn't get it, right? Like the newsroom. You can't stand next to Liz Bowie for any period of time and not just become instantly indoctrinated in the value and power of the newsroom. And I'm looking back to like when you and I were working together, right? And you're like crushing through some work and communications, press releases, that kind of thing. And I'm flitting around, like, you know, running around.
You flitting around, Damian?
You went from a place where there was an incredible collegiality about the search for truth to, you know, a public affairs.
But you know what? Like, we, for the most part, when we were working together, like, we were pursuing things that I believed in and you believed in, whether That's it was, true. You know, bringing a, the casino to National Harbor and what that's meant for our state, or you know, one of my deep down favorites was like opening up state coverage of for drugs, because at the time state insurance right. wasn't covering it, and we brought that or numerous other projects, expanding Beans and Bread. Yes,
yeah, but you were the best, because one time we had to fire a client, and we won't name the client, but they were a gigantic client, and we had to fire them. And the way we fired them was you put them and Ray Lewis on the front page of the Baltimore Sun, and then we saw what we could do for you. See you later. Have a good
night.
Good night. Marvel to you are marvel to watch, and your work and your discipline is unmatched. I think if you asked anybody in a newsroom, anybody in a political campaign, anybody in a Howard Libet, they would talk to you about your work ethic. Where does that come from? Where does that energy come from, Howard?
I would say I learned it in the newsroom in terms of urgency. Like, there's no better place than a news printing press is going, regardless of it's at a certain time and it's got to get done. And they're just, you learn that to juggle it. And I got like the skills I learned there. And you see this from other newspaper alumni across different industries, like the ability to write quickly, to move quickly, to make decisions. You know, it can be frustrating in other worlds, nonprofit worlds or elsewhere, not commenting on anyone specifically, but like moving with urgency. Even to the extent of, and you experienced all the time too, like responding to emails in a prompt manner. Like, there's lots of parts of the world where they don't see, you know, a 24-hour turnaround on an email is as the expected norm. Like, people move at a pace, and I that and the people I work with here, that we look, the world moves fast. Like, sitting on stuff and not responding, it's going to get ahead of you, and you're going to lose control. Now maybe I have a little too much urgency sometimes and get a little frustrated, but
maybe that gives you just a second. Maybe that pace gives you more of a sense of control than sort of like being prone gives you more control than sort of laying back.
On the other hand, it is great when you, like when this past summer, when we went out, I went out west and visited Yellowstone and Grand Tetons and stuff. And there were large chunks of time in those national parks where there's like almost no cell coverage and no email. Boy, that is a relief to know. It's not even a question of ignoring emails.
Not my fault.
I'm not getting them, you know? You're familiar, right? It's like to have that break is great.
What I don't get is how you could do a video conference call from Colorado with people in Maryland, but once you get in the first class of the Acela from Baltimore to Washington, you can't complete a telephone call. I don't understand that.
Oh, it's everywhere. I was in my basement office the other day on a call with some folks from the governor's office, and my electricity just went out, and I dropped off, and I couldn't get a signal, and you're like, this shouldn't be. I mean, but it happens to everybody. But I do. It would be great if Amtrak up quality of that internet service on the rail line.
I got two last questions for you. Just give me your view of is it wrong to say that there's a local news renaissance in Baltimore? Just talk to me about like what you're seeing, good or bad. You've got no particular allegiance. Well, I guess you got a pretty strong tie to the Baltimore Sun as a
and to Center Maryland.
Thank you. Howard invented Center Maryland. It's
been exciting. It's been to see the enhanced competition. And I mean it in the sense of like the banner's been, you know, covered some things that I don't think others have seen. And they've also brought out better in the Sun too. I mean, I think you've seen a stepped up urgency and quality in the Sun to compete. And then you've got all these other, you know, and I don't mean it in a diminishing way to say niche web, like Matters is doing great coverage of different aspects of government stuff.
Would we be without them?
Pardon?
Where would we be without Maryland Matters?
Yeah, exactly. And look, the crew does cover some neighborhood stuff out of Baltimore that no one else is noticing from time to time. And it's all, but it's like the you know, at the end of the banner or Sun are driving also better coverage on our electronic media, the radio stations and the TV stations. It is like, I think it's one of those where I know this expression is overused, but the rising tide lifts all boats.
Sure.
I mean, I think
it's appropriate for a port town news conversation.
So you've got different, I mean, I love working with a lot of the journalists in town, both the old veterans, the veterans and also the new folks who are coming in, who are bringing energy and a fresh set of eyes and are spotting things that, you know, we've always known. So we're like, ho-hum. But they're like, no, that's different. We should write about that.
What's the guy with the bat from the banner who's doing like TikToks and stuff? They're doing some cool stuff over there. And I can't recall his name.
Being all digital. And I remember when talking to Ted Venatoulis over the years before, you know, we were talking about, you know, kicking around ideas of what to launch and everything. And Ted being an old school print guy, that couldn't get around part of the idea of not having a print component to it.
And he publishes the digital
book. Yeah, right. But the base zone, I think that you can go, you know, you can make it work all digital, and you know, and through email blasts and through the website, like it's an informative source,
and relevant, right? Timely.
And it's relevant, and the Sun is forced, and they're like, sometimes they're covering the same stuff, and sometimes they're covering different things. So you kind of have to keep up with everybody so you're not missing what's happening. Or you could just read the Center Maryland newsletter and get the summary of everything.
That's right. That was the idea.
That was the last one you wanted, right, Damien?
That's right. I'll take that. But I do. I have a question for you. It's a little silly, but it's earnest. Yeah, we get to go around the country on different projects or fun things. We get to connect with leaders in the Jewish community. And I just feel like, can you explain to our audience what the word mocker means from your definition? Do you want me to give it a try?
Yeah, let's hear your definition first.
I would say like a big swinging leader,
I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know, somebody that's really impactful and prominent.
They don't have to be, like a big donor or anything, but there's someone whose voice carries a lot of weight in the community. People look to them to be a leader, look to them for their endorsement and when they go a certain direction, people instinctively want to follow them because they trust their vote and their leadership.
So don't you think we have the best mockers in the world in Baltimore? Like, don't you think if we put our mockers up against,
pound for pound,
Louisville absolutely. Or San Francisco, we'd take them out?
We've got amazing leaders, and I'm not even going to start to name them because whoever I don't,
you'll get in trouble.
But like huge in town, the folks in major national Jewish organizations, just the family.
Right.
And obviously the late Shoshana Carden was such an influential leader in so much of the Jewish philanthropic world. We are so fortunate. I am so fortunate to have learned at the feet of so many leaders. I mean, Mark Terrell from the Associated is stepping down this upcoming summer, and to have been able to spend the last 7 years working with him, learning from him. Whenever he calls me to alert me to community issues he's having, but if I'm also encountering one and I call Mark for advice, he knows all sides. He knows all the players. He's got such great advice. So powerful and so influential. And I'm just lucky to have in my cell phone the numbers of so many trusted people I can turn to.
Well, when I'm, kicking it or whatever, I just need you to make sure that Han and Bean Seibel and Rachel Monroe, play some role at my funeral. That's all I ask of you.
I just want the mocker
of mockers there. That's all I ask.
The mocker, don't you worry. But let's hope many, many years away.
No, Bean's going to outlast me, so I just want to put the order in now.
Yeah, there are people in town
Rachel too.
30 years older than me who I know are going to live longer than me.
That's right.
One of them.
Well, Howard, man, you're the greatest of all time. We know that because we've watched you up close and far away. This community, listeners, we owe this moment to you because, there would be no Center Maryland without Howard Libet. And there would be no, it brings the comprehensive understanding of Maryland, the faith community, governance. You bring so much to the table in all your breaths. And we're just so grateful for what you do for Baltimore, what you do for the community, and your extreme tolerance in dealing with partners like myself.
Oh, I love you, Damien. It was our 6+ years were an amazing experience that prepared me to be in City Hall during the riots and so on.
That's right. We did prepare you for that.
I was like, hey, I dealt with Damien. Bring it on.
He's Howard Libet. He leads the Baltimore Jewish Council. We're grateful for everything he is doing, and we send all of our love and spirits to the people that are suffering the most in the world today, and anything we do as these tides of sorrow lap up against our friends in the community, anything we can do I think is appreciated. Just want to thank you, Howard, for taking the time during this critical moment.
Thank you for having me, Dan. Excited to catch up.
We'll see you next time. Center Maryland's The Lobby.